30 years ago today, the hip-hop group Public Enemy released the album It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, and at the time, hip-hop was still often on the fringes of the mainstream music industry. Today, the album is regarded by some critics as one of the most influential of all time, and its experimental production and social-political themes continue to resonate with listeners and inspire artists today. For more on the groundbreaking album, we talked to Ernesto Aguilar, a freelance writer, membership program director for the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, and a music writer. We'll hear from Ernesto Aguilar after a bit from Public Enemy's frontman, Chuck D.
Our first tour was the Beastie Boys already having 20,000 people in front of them, and Public Enemy's going to open up with a large logo, sirens, two brothers on top of stanchions with Uzis, and we're coming out looking like we're out of the Black Panthers and Nation of Islam, and we don't give a damn what you white folks think. This is the truth, and let the truth shall set you free.
Freedom is a road seldom traveled by the multitude.
Well, set the stage for us before this album comes out. What was the rap scene like?
1980s hip-hop is probably not far from the mainstream rap that you're hearing right now. These were not the most complex songs, and the lyrics were pretty commonplace, having fun, pursuing dates, being great, being rich, or both was pretty much the footprint. Now, 1988 was the year that the actor Will Smith broke into the pop music scene in March as the Fresh Prince with the song Parents Just Don't Understand.
You know, parents are the same no matter time, no place. They don't understand that us kids are going to make some mistakes. So to you other kids all across the land, there's no need to argue. Parents just don't understand.
A Nation of Millions wasn't Public Enemy's first album. Where were they at this point before they sat down to put out this album?
Now, Public Enemy was introduced to the world with its 1987 debut album, Yo Bum Rush the Show. The story for that record has seen some remarkable revisionism in a lot of respects. The New York Times and a few others hailed that record as a powerful political statement, but absolutely, there were some strong messages, but the album tipped to pretty much being your typical late 80s party record. It was also not a big sales-shattering release. It did not chart particularly well, and so Public Enemy came out of 1987 regarded as a promising young band, but virtually nobody predicted that they'd vault into the stratosphere the way that they did. First, it was Chuck D's baritone. His rhyme style changed between show and nation from more of a vibe popular in the 80s to more of the insistent style that we have come to be used to. And then there was the production. There were pop, jazz, and soul influences and complicated samples there. But what the Bomb Squad provided was considerably denser and more aligned on funk and rock.
Yeah, this was a very new and different. It was this wall of sounds that when I heard it was different than anything I'd heard before. Did everybody, even everybody within Public Enemy, like this new heavily layered sound?
It's funny. Chuck D has often been quoted that he hated the record Don't Believe the Hype, one of their biggest records, and certainly one that is iconic to them, because didn't really like the sound, thought it was a little bit odd, and just didn't really fit with them. And certainly if you listen to Show and listen to Nation, they sound completely different.
Here's what I want you all to do for me. Bang! What you looking for? The same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring. Uh-oh, the roll below the level, cause I'm living low next to the base.
Come on!
Turn up the radio. They're claiming I'm a criminal.
But Nation is why Public Enemy is compared to the Sex Pistols and the Clash now. This record was shocking to a lot of people. Show was looked at for some of its social consciousness, but Nation was really a manifesto. It did not speak or sound like anything else back then, and certainly not like its previous release.
I'm the epitome of Public Enemy. Used, abused without clues. I refuse to blow a fuse. They even had it on the news.
Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype.
And it it accomplished something that you don't see in pop culture very often, really once in a generation or two. Music that's uncompromisingly political, but captures the attention of the mainstream because it was fun to listen to. It was different. Music scholars can delve into how it treated sampling, Chuck's new, more urgent flow, and the arrangement of the album overall. However, nothing in rap before or since had made the splash that Nation did because it was so accessible to the mainstream.
Our team put together a clip of how Public Enemy sampled other artists to help lay the backbone for these tracks. We're going to listen now. You'll hear a snippet of Madison's own, the late Clyde Stubblefield, drumming on James Brown's Funky Drummer. Then over the top, we'll hear a saxophone line from a song called The Grunt by the same band. And then you'll hear how Public Enemy put it all together for the track Rebel Without a Pause. Here's a listen. So take that apart for us a little bit. Clyde Stubblefield, we talked to him before he passed away about the Funky Drummer, I think the most sampled drum track in human history, I think. Talk about how it all comes together.
The fascinating thing about Rebel Without a Pause to me is how the producers took Funky Drummer, what's become, as you pointed out, one of rap's best known samples, and they could have easily left it right there. There are literally dozens of hip hop songs they've used Funky Drummer and Funky Drummer alone, and that's been just fine. And they've made hits out of those songs. However, what was so interesting about this is the Bomb Squad interspersed it with another song, as you mentioned, and three other songs that make Rebel Without a Pause. You can hear within their Chub Rock, Joski Love, and the Soul Children in parts of that song, and they create a different experience, not the usual, oh, I recognize that sample, which many of us have had when we listen to hip hop, but instead have created an independent composition altogether. And you can hear that in a lot of different cuts within this record. You think of a lesser known song like Party for Your Right to Fight on the album, which is, when you listen to it, it's a fairly simple track. It's basically Chuck and Flavor reading the same script, but the song actually includes samples from Sly and the Family Stone, Bob Marley, the Beastie Boys, James Brown, Bobby Bird, Funkadelic, and a speech by Malcolm X. So you get this complex thing that really stands out and makes it so outstanding.
We're talking to Ernesto Aguilar, freelance writer, membership program director for the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. It's the 30th anniversary of the Public Enemy album, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Let's start talking about the influence of this now. It inspired a lot of people, but also the Bomb Squad, the production team, went on to produce a lot of other big releases, not, I think, just by Public Enemy. Can you talk about what they went on to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, pop music is about being popular, and the Bomb Squad created something unprecedented with Nation, and most assuredly, there were musicians that wanted that touch in hopes that they could rock it to fame. But what sometimes is lost, I think, in that equation is the moment that Nation came. At a time of tensions in New York, there was the police killing of the graffiti artist Michael Stewart, race riots, and more. And indeed, there were issues everywhere. And Chuck's voice was one that demanded attention.
We wanted to destroy all barriers set up for music. And Brain of Noise, we thought, was the first statement that actually said, you treat us like you know, but you know, we're music too.
It had an energy and tapped into a cultural flashpoint that was almost impossible to repeat. Regardless, the Bomb Squad produced some groundbreaking records. They work with Vanessa Williams, LL Cool J, Ziggy Marley, Bell Biv DeVoe, Eric B. and Rakim, the Manic Street Preachers, Run DMC. They produced Ice Cube's solo album from N.W.A. And they also maintained the Public Enemy relationship onward, producing Fear of a Black Planet, Apocalypse 91, and more of their lesser-known records.
You use the phrase, talking about Chuck D's voice, demanded attention. And I think that with this album, the voice, Flavor Flav, the production, this is not an album you play in the background and ignore.
Yeah, absolutely not. What's interesting to me is how this emboldened a lot of performers. Sales didn't hurt. Nation moved about 500,000 units in its first month and went platinum within the year, which was outstanding for a hip-hop release at the time. But Chuck had a way of demanding attention with the cadence that he hit.
Never batted it back because a brother is manner than manner. The fact is corrupt like a senator. Soul on the road, but you treat it like soap on the rope because the beats and the lines are so dope. Listen for lessons I'm saying inside music that the critics are blasting me for. They'll never care for the brothers and sisters. Why, because the country has us up for the war. We got to get them straight. Come on now.
This kind of style where his baritone was put with a lot more emphasis on particular words brought out the music and really matched the production in a way that was completely unique for the period and really sent shockwaves through a lot of hip-hop.
How did the rap world react to the politics being so front and center on this album? Did it encourage other people to follow suit?
I think a lot of what emboldened so many individuals was the fact that this record was so successful. I suggest a group like NWA, which was avowedly political from the start, gained far more notoriety and fame in part thanks to Public Enemy's ability to show that there was an assertive buying public that was interested in how African Americans viewed the state of the world. That effort by Public Enemy really reshaped how labels saw this music and also how the public saw it, and in turn emboldened artists to step out a bit more than they may have otherwise.
Let's look back from our vantage point now, 30 years later. Some albums don't hold up 3 decades later, even if they were big, even if they were influential at the time. Is this still a Nation of Millions? Is this still an album worth going back and listening to?
Nation of Millions really does stand out in a lot of ways for both its production values as well as its lyrical content. If you can look at the headlines today, we see racial conflict still remains a relevant conversation. Many of the issues that Public Enemy brought forward to the mainstream was completely atypical for that period, and also was something that still remains crucial for people to understand today. I think that there is still quite a great deal for people who listen to 8 Takes and Nation of Millions to hold us back, both with an appreciation for the sound of it as well as its importance and significance politically as a record.
Ernesto, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Ernesto Aguilar is a music writer and membership program director for the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. He joined us to talk about the influential Public Enemy album, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. That was released exactly 30 years ago today.